Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Some breaking news this morning. A suspect has now been arrested in the attack on the 65-year-old woman near Times Square this week, as the video of that attack, have you seen it, is shocking viewers in New York and around the world. It's incredibly disturbing. It's broad daylight in Midtown Manhattan. You see the now allegedly apprehended suspect, Brandon Elliott, approaching 65-year-old Vilma Kari, pushing her to the ground and stomping on her several times, apparently all while making anti-Asian remarks. What makes the surveillance video even more chilling is that there were a number of people watching from the lobby of a nearby building. You can see it. And they did not appear to go out and help the victim in any way. Here's Mayor de Blasio yesterday talking about the incident.
And we need everyone to be a part of this. Because yesterday, I don't know if you've seen the video, but absolutely disgusting and outrageous video of an Asian woman being attacked, pushed to the ground, kicked viciously by someone full of hate. That was bad enough. But then to see a security guard standing nearby and not intervening, absolutely unacceptable. Look, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you do. You've got to help your fellow New Yorker. And if you see someone being attacked, do whatever you can. Make noise, call out what's happening, go and try and help. Immediately call for help, call 911. I mean, this is something where we all have to be part of the solution. We can't just stand back and watch a heinous act happening. And I think for so many Asian American New Yorkers who are feeling isolated right now, who are feeling fearful, they need to know that they have solidarity of all New Yorkers and support.
The mayor yesterday. And of course, we acknowledge that it's difficult to know how to help when you see a violent incident taking place, right? We all like to think we'll act heroically, but in the moment, there are a lot of unknowns, including will the attacker go after me if I try to help? Or what am I supposed to say or do that can make a difference? That's why increasingly the Stop Asian Hate movement, and you may know that hashtag Stop Asian Hate, is encouraging concerned citizens to undergo something called bystander training, which helps you think through some of these questions and scenarios before an incident ever takes place in your presence. With me now, Dax Valdez. He's a senior bystander trainer at Hollaback, a global organization aimed at ending harassment in all of its forms. We also have Sandy Yang, director of communications and marketing for Protect Chinatown. Their group is also asking volunteers to be engaged bystanders, particularly in their case by chaperoning elderly Chinatown residents if they are fearful of going out by themselves. So obviously for them, there doesn't need to have to be an attack in progress. They are also doing patrols of the neighborhoods now, however. Hi, Dax. Hi, Sandy. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Hello. Great to be here.
Now, people were quick to call out those men watching Monday's attack from the lobby of the Midtown building for not intervening. The mayor mentioned one was a security guard. Dax, what do you think when you see that video?
It's really upsetting to see, especially since what I observed in the video from the security lobby, those guys were, if not equal to, then as the same size as the perpetrator. So they should have felt empowered to step in and prevent what was happening, but also, you know, you can't gauge the other person's reaction, but also they didn't have this proper training and they probably didn't want to put themselves in physical danger as well. But it is really upsetting to see that the action that they took was to close the door.
Just to protect themselves.
And leave her on the street. That feels so callous, especially at this time. NYPD has reported 33 hate crimes in 2021 as compared to something like 20 last year, and we're 3 months into the new year.
Well, take us a little bit into what your training would have people do in that case. I mean, maybe it's a special situation that they were security guards, so presumably they had some kind of training that would allow them to intervene in some way that they would consider relatively safe. But what should a person do if that exact situation were taking place in front of them and they had the understandable fear that they would be next in line to be kicked and stomped on, and who knows if the guy had weapons when they see this take place in front of them?
Of course. So our work with bystander intervention and the workshops that we're doing with Advancing Justice AAJC, they focus on the person who's experiencing the harassment. And a lot of times what we want to do with bystander intervention is address initial behaviors of harassment and disrespect before they escalate to the things that we're seeing in the news, like physical assault. So we have a series of bystander intervention strategies. We call them the 5 D's. The first one is distract, and this is creating a distraction to de-escalate a situation, whether you pretend you know the person who is experiencing that conflict and you start a conversation with them, asking them for directions, or pretending that you know them and then you're pulling that person to safety and you're ignoring the person who's doing the harassing. The second one is delegate, and this is asking somebody else for help, whether it is the person who's next to you on the street or in public transportation, or maybe it's somebody who's in charge of the area you happen to be in, whether it is a security guard or a restaurant or a store manager. Then we also have a tactic document, and this is taking a photo or a video of the incident of harassment if you feel safe. And this is something the building was already automatically documenting what goes on outside. So that's how we were able to see this most recent incident. Mm-hmm. The next one is delay, is after the incident of harassment is over, you check in with the person who was experiencing that harm and you make an offer of how you can support them. And the last one is direct. And this is the one that everybody thinks about when they think about bystander intervention. So intervening directly, setting a boundary with the person who's doing the harassing, and then getting the person in conflict away and to safety.
Such a good list. Distract, delegate, delay, direct. Which one did I miss?
Document,
like taking a video. And yeah, listeners, and we're going to open up the phones right away here. Do you have a question about how to be a good bystander? Call in 646-435-7280. You can get some bystander training right here on the air. Do you want to know more about how to act if you see harassment taking place or a violent incident of any kind? What do you do or say, or how do you balance your own safety with the safety of the victims? Or maybe, listeners, you have a story about the time that you were an active bystander and you did intervene, or a time that you wish that you had. What stopped you? 646-435-7280. Let's have this conversation and try to empower everybody who's out there right now to do what they can do, in most cases safely, we hope, when they see something like this taking place. 646-435-7280. Maybe the harassment was happening to you and someone else did or did not intervene. You can tell us that story as well. And also call in if you're a Chinatown resident, specifically from any of the area's Chinatowns, or a listener of Asian descent. How are you feeling after hearing about Monday's attack? How could you feel? Are you concerned for your own safety or the safety of your family members at a new level recently? Or what else did you think? What are people in your orbit doing after seeing that video and some of the other incidents that we've been talking about in recent times? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. And Sandy, let me go to you and invite you to introduce your group to our listeners and tell us what you do.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Sandy. I am a co-founder of Protect Chinatown. A couple friends and I, we saw the increase in Asian attacks recently, and we felt the need to be proactive about it before numbers do increase. And similar to the data stated before, in 2019, we had 3 Asian attacks, hate crime attacks in New York reported right? These are reported attacks in 2019. In 2020, we had about 29. In 2021, we've already had 30, and it's only March. That's trending at 10 per month. So that we can only see this go up to 120 by the end of the year at this rate, or even more. So we have to be proactive, and now is the time more than ever for a group like ours to come out and say, hey, we're here to protect our community. We're here to protect anyone who feels unsafe going out. This is just ridiculous how many people are currently shown on the websites, online, being bystanders. So we actually, Protect Chinatown, we actually follow the 5Ds as well when we do go out for any of our chaperoning and when we do our community walks, which are similar to patrols around our neighborhood to ensure that we are watching out for any possible attacks and then providing the bystander effect 5Ds to ensure we are de-escalating any issues when we see them. So we as a group are... We have about 120 volunteers that are interviewed. Every single one of them, when signing up, they have to post a negative COVID form because we want, you know, we want to make sure that we're not being super spreaders during our patrols. We want to ensure every elderly is safe as well. So when they sign up, they already are confirmed for negative COVID, and then we interview them. Usually these are referral-based volunteers. However, we do have a large mix of people who are so passionate about the initiative, and they all want to help.
I know that you're still in the outreach acquisition phase, so you haven't gotten that many requests for chaperones. But for the few requests that you have received, what are the reasons people are giving?
So when they reach out, they're usually saying, hey, I'm really, like for one example, I'm really nervous to go into Chinatown because of the recent attacks. I have to go see my doctor. Should I reschedule my doctor's appointment? Is this safe right now to even go into Chinatown, right? And naturally, you know, these attacks aren't just based in Chinatown. They are random and very unpredictable all around town. So one of our members is from uptown area. She needed to go and come downtown to see her doctor. She was concerned to come down. So I actually reached out personally. It was referral based from a friend who said, hey, Protect Chinatown is actually doing this. So you can reach out to them and they're trustworthy. So in the moments that we've launched over a month ago, we are still, you know, trying to earn trust of our community, put a face to our organization, because we are an org that requires a face so that we can earn trust of our community, of our elderlies, because naturally a lot of our elderlies, unfortunately, they do require that chaperone service, but many of them are not speaking up because they don't want to burden others in asking for help, right? And that's very natural in the Asian culture. We usually suck it up, a lot of our pain, and kind of just push through. So
and reluctant we're to trying ask for to, help.
Exactly, yeah. And you're, but this is when we need help.
Yes. And with Sandy Yang from Protect Chinatown and Dax Valdez, a bystander trainer with Hollaback, Patrick in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patrick. Thank you for calling in.
Yes. On Friday at 3:30 in the afternoon, I was getting on the subway. I was late for a doctor's appointment, and I'd actually missed my stop and was retreating back. And at 34th Street and 6th Avenue, a guy was kind of blocking the door. A tall kind of white guy was blocking the door. So I went to the other door, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw him turn into the subway and sucker punch this Asian guy. He broke his nose. And I could hear that even with my headphones on. Mm. I know what a broken nose sounds like because I had one broken before and my doctor had to reset it. So I actually know what that is. And I got on the subway and then it took a second to realize what was happening. And the guy was standing right in the doorway. So he ran away. And as I ran towards the door closed before I could do anything. And then the rest of us were all standing there frozen in our steps. It wasn't that anybody didn't want to do anything. It was, this is unbelievable. And blood was pouring out of his, I'm sorry to be so graphic, blood was pouring out of his nose. And he was just like in this state of shock too. And finally, I told him to hold his head back. I thought that's what you had to do to keep the stop the blood. And then finally, this young guy started going towards him, and I didn't yell. I talked really loudly to everybody to say what had happened, because I didn't know what to do. So it took me 3 days to find out that Canal Street Station is where the police department for the NYPD Transit Authority is located for 34th Street. So I'm going down there today to report it in hopes that the guy himself reported the incident.
And you know, you still sound shaken.
There had to have been something I could have done.
Oh, Patrick. Dax, talk to Patrick.
Hey, Patrick, thank you for sharing that. And it is really upsetting to feel powerless in that situation. But, you know, from what you've shared, you did what you thought was right, and you were able to use a tactic, delegate, and tell other people what's going on, because they might not have been aware or have been too scared. And you are following through. You're going to go report this in person. So thank you for helping somebody in need in that instance. And I also want to honor that sometimes the incident of harassment can be so quick. Somebody getting sucker punched in the face, or somebody drives by somebody and yells a racial slur on the street. And all you can do in that instance is use something like delay and try and check in on the person. And, you know, understandably so, in an instance like that where everybody is shell-shocked after what happened, you know, it is a judgment call to step up and act. So what you're doing and what you did, I commend you for, because it is a brave thing to do.
And Patrick,
want to say on top of that, I don't want to dispel your focus today on the Asian situation, is that yesterday, I'm 73 years old, old, heavy, you know, white guy. A black lady followed me for four blocks down the street, yelling at me, saying that I had hurt her son. I'd put him in the freezer. What did I do? Why I had done that? And people on the street really thought that she really knew what she was talking about. So it's not, it's everybody. It's everything. We've got to get back to being people that care about people.
Patrick, thank you very much. Yes, go ahead, Patrick. You wanted to finish a thought? You may.
No, I just want us to start caring about each other.
Thank you very much. Dax, any last thought to him?
Thank you. No, I think, you know, you always have to prioritize your safety as a bystander as well. So, again, you know, you did what you thought was right, Patrick, in that instance. And, again, thank you for following through and filing that report, because a lot of these incidences go unreported.
And we hear Patrick's distress over questioning himself about what more he might have done. And I want to play a clip that relates to that, that comes from yesterday's Derek Chauvin trial. And of course, Derek Chauvin, the former officer accused of murdering George Floyd. And the in this particular instance, and of course, it's a special case when the person you're seeing as a violent perpetrator is a police officer. This is Darnella Frazier, a teenager who videotaped Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck. And here she is from the trial yesterday.
It's been nights. I stayed up apologizing and apologizing to George Floyd for not doing more and not physically interacting and not saving his life. But it's like, it's not what I should have done. It's what he should have done.
And ultimately she concludes correctly, it's not what she should have done, it's what he should have done. Derek Chauvin. But Sandy, would you like to react to that? Because what I hear in that is the psychological impact of being that witness and not intervening as this poor kid is experiencing. And yet she was just a kid. And the people perpetrating the violence, as she was seeing it, were police officers. And maybe yeah. we've lost... Go ahead, Sandy.
I'm sorry. You can continue if you have more to
no,
say.
No, go ahead. You but, please.
Definitely, these are true incidents that hold near and dear for all of us. And, you know, at a time when everyone should be responding, there are some that are not. I would like to say, though, there are definitely a lot more people who care than who those who are causing attacks on our community. So in light of everything, we have so many passionate team members who are prepared to, you know, for these attacks. And we are actually taking a holodeck training this week as well to ensure that we as a team are prepared when we see these attacks and are not bystanders, and we are able to distract, document, and perform the 5Ds. So, you know, it's an unfortunate time, but I hope that down a couple months down the line, we are at a better state.
Dax, anything for you as a bystander trainer on that special circumstance where the perp is a police officer?
So, you know, a lot of times we think about using Delegate to call the police, but, you know, sometimes the police aren't always creating a scenario where people feel safer, as we, you know, as we know with George Floyd and countless other Black folks who have lost their lives unjustly. So, you know, we started referring folks to the ACLU website. They've got a great one pager on what your rights are to not interfere with the police and still document and feel safe without breaking the law. And if enough people are speaking up and speaking out about what's wrong, and, you know, we're using everything that we can to feel safe and comfortable, documenting, directly intervening, you know, hopefully those small actions can create bigger change. And what Sandy is doing with Project Chinatown is a step in that right direction. And like she said, hopefully in a few months, we wouldn't need these services anymore. We're still going to need them. And I'm so glad that Project Chinatown is there. Hollaback is here to provide trainings to folks. But it is super upsetting that it is all getting compressed. And, you know, we're all feeling the strain, especially under this pandemic. And then as soon as the vaccines are getting rolled out, we're going to be up against mass compliance again, you know, for a couple more months. And as people are reemerging into the public, there is definitely going to be conflict arising. So, you know, we have to be armed with these strategies in order to take care of each other and speaking up about harassment and disrespect when we see it.
And with Dax Valdez, bystander training at Hollaback, and Sandy Yang from Project Chinatown, Tony in Glen Rock, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tony. Thank you for calling in.
Hi. Long-time listener, many-time caller. I finally got through. Thank you, Brian.
Glad you're on.
So I'm a fairly small man. I'm 5'4". I'm in my 50s now. I did some martial arts training when I was young, and in martial arts training, we learned that if you are going to act, you have to act viciously, loudly, and it's distracting. And I've been involved in a number of incidents where people were being racially harassed in stores. And what I did is just essentially confront the person loudly, saying that's not correct, and got other people involved. And the person generally just runs away. They're looking to pick on people, always try to pick on people who are helpless. And if they realize that people are helping, they will generally just run away.
When you say that you've been involved in confrontations as a bystander with your martial arts training and people have run away, What do you display from your martial arts training that makes them run away?
Well, I just stand very confidently. I speak very loudly. Generally, I use a swear word because that gets people's attention very quickly. And I yell at them, that's not right, get out of here. And being very strong in your voice, speaking very confidently, it has an effect on people. You know, police are trained to yell and scream and be commanding. And you do that to scare the person and basically get compliance through that voice control.
And that takes some courage and confidence. Have any of these attackers, when you've done that, then turned on you?
They have turned to me at times, and I've just basically stood my ground. Eventually, other people are involved. They're around. They don't want to get involved in a confrontation because I'm not allowing them to pick on me. Being a small man growing up in the Midwest, there are a lot of big people that picked on me, and I learned that you can't feed the bully the fear.
Tony, thank you very much for your call and for those interventions. Dax, does your bystander training include mixed martial arts?
It does not, but what Tony used was direct. He is setting the boundary, telling the person what they're doing is not cool, and making sure that whoever is in experiencing that conflict can be safe and taken care of. So thank you for standing up.
And your five D's, again, for bystanders are distract, delegate, document, delay, and direct. I want to ask you about the first one, distract. I was hoping that people would call in with some stories of distracting perpetrators. We've had stories like that from callers on the show in the past, but maybe you could tell a story, because there are many ways to distract. You started to get at it earlier, but it could be, for example, pretending that you know the victim. You brought that one up. Give us an example of that.
Yeah. So if you see somebody who looks like they are getting harassed, you could walk up to them and say, hey, sorry, I'm late. Are you ready to go? And you don't have to refer to the person or talk about what's going on with the harassment, but you're focusing on the person in conflict and you start to create this safe space around them. You could also consider asking them for directions, or, you know, pretend you haven't seen them in a long time. Oh my gosh, I thought that was you under that mask. How are you doing? Hey, what are you doing right now? Anything to shift the attention away from what's going on. Or you could pretend to drop something. So if you walk by the incident, maybe you spill your cup of coffee on accidentally, right? Or you drop something that is going to make everybody turn around and reorient themselves. And hopefully that's enough for someone else to see what's going on and also step up and take action.
Sandy Yang from Protect Chinatown, when we talk about getting the police involved, you know, the NYPD union endorsed Trump, who many people blame for starting the current blaze anyway of anti-Asian hate and rhetoric over the past year because of the way he spoke about the coronavirus. I think there's anger there for a lot of Asian American as well as other people for that. How does that play in to how any of your chaperones or anyone else might be trained or might just think about calling the police when an anti-Asian verbal or other attack takes place?
Hey there. So right now, Protect Chinatown is ensuring that we are doing what we can to mitigate and prevent any attacks on our community. And especially right now, the elderly are prioritized because they are the most vulnerable. Generally, they're smaller, and females are the ones getting attacked in the elderly community as well. So we're the weakest, target, and in terms of police reaching out to them, we haven't had to call any police, thank God. And none of our patrols and community walks or chaperone moments we have intervened with any attacks. So for police, I think that, you know, they definitely want to be trained correctly, and we are reaching out and are asked to reach out if it's needed. 911 is there as a number that we should be reaching out to if necessary. However, we as Protect Chinatown are there to protect our community. If we see something, we are doing something.
Do you want to describe your community patrols and what they do different from what the police themselves would be doing patrolling Chinatown?
Yeah, definitely. So we are doing chaperoning and community walks. So our community walks, we did our first one sometime this week, and we have over 25 to 30 volunteers that showed up along with our team members. We're all there. We split up into different groups and routes prepared so they can scan the QR code, and these are the directions that we should be patrolling. As we are doing these patrols, they're around 5 to 6 people per route, and we have about 6 routes that we went on, and all of these routes are generally in areas where it's either one high crime areas and or quieter areas where perpetrators definitely tend to commit crime. So we try to engage in as many routes as possible and as repeatedly as possible to ensure that we are capturing any incidents and protect our community, especially for the vulnerable and the elderly.
Lisa in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, I'm Asian descent, and I don't go out by myself. My husband, I pretty much stay in the apartment. But on the other hand, I'm very, very ashamed for my fellow New Yorkers, those bystanders who didn't do anything for those two cases. You know, it's just so ashamed and angry. And that's it. Thank you.
Lisa, may I ask, for how long have you not been going out? Is this a recent development?
Yes, I would say this year. And I do go out only when my husband comes with me, and he doesn't allow me to go out by myself.
Sandy, do you want to talk to Lisa?
Hey there, my name is Sandy. I'm on the board of Protect Chinatown. We're actually here to partner anyone who is nervous about going out with a couple of our volunteers, and we will, you know, prepare a start time that you would like and a location that you feel comfortable meeting at, and our volunteers will meet you in that location and chaperone and buddy you up until your end location. So we're definitely here to support you per your needs to ensure that you feel safe going outside.
So maybe Project Thank Chinatown you. Can help you go out a little more, not just with your husband, who obviously it sounds like wants to protect you, but it's no way to live, Lisa, right?
Yeah, it's not a normal life, you know.
Yeah, definitely don't feel afraid to reach out. Well, we are called Protect Chinatown, so we can reach out to protectchinatown.com if you need to request, or we also have a number that you can call if you have difficulty signing up on our website.
All right, and listeners, Lisa or anyone else, if you want to take the Protect Chinatown phone number, get ready for it. I'll invite Sandy to give it in a minute as we wrap up the segment. But let me take one more phone call first with somebody with experience and advice. Sharon in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sharon.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to offer some practical advice from my Navy SEAL boyfriend of 5 years who has been helpful in teaching me some things about getting around New York, even though I'm a 20-year veteran here. When you are walking down the street, 6-foot social distancing isn't just for coronavirus. Like, when you're passing people, try to keep that distance if you're not in a crowded Manhattan street. When you take a corner, always take it at a distance. Try to take a wide berth around the corner so you can see who's around the corner. Always watch people's hands, because generally, even though this latest attack was somebody kicking, generally only people's hands can hurt you. They're where they hold a knife or a gun, or they're going to punch you. And by just keeping track of those things on the street is very helpful. And also, 3 times over the years, I have intervened in domestic violence, escalating situations on the street using my command voice, which I learned from being a training in for a drum major in the marching band in high school. And people do really take notice if you speak from your diaphragm and you shout out, "Hey, get away from her," in a very commanding way, and you have a strong presence. And that distraction can, in different instances, has given the woman time to get away from the guy. And he, in all three instances, he did turn and yell at me, but didn't do anything because they're shocked that somebody is actually doing anything. So good luck to everybody. And I also am appalled, just appalled, to see these actions taking place in New York, and even worse, to see people not intervening.
And you speak for so many people, Sharon. Thank you, and thank you for those tips. And we're going to leave it there, except for our guests to give their contact information. Sandy Yang, you want to go first, Director of Communications and Marketing for Protect Chinatown. If people want to get in touch to ask for chaperones or volunteer or anything else, how can they do that?
Sure. So you can sign up on protectchinatown.com. And as a person requesting a chaperone, you can also dial in at 646-543-4055. If you would like to call and request a chaperone, you can also request on our website, protectchinatown.com.
And Dax Valdez, Senior Bystander Trainer at Hollaback. How about if people want to take the bystander training?
So they can look at our webpage, ihollaback.org/bystander intervention. We have a series of free trainings next week, the 5th through the 8th, and then again on the 14th and the 29th. And currently they are at capacity, but we are working hard to get more free trainings available to the public. So please check in and stay tuned.
Thank you both so much for joining us and for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.